So I'm talking with Gabe Newman, who's actually a friend of mine from way back in the mists of university. Since then, Gabe has gone on to be a ghost tour operator, operating his own company. So I thought I'd chat with him over the phone today about that. Hi, Gabe.
Hey, Kennedy.
How you doing?
I'm swell.
Excellent. Well, let's dive right in. I'm just going to throw it to you. Why don't you just tell me about how you got started in doing the ghost tour?
Well, I got started back when I was living in Newfoundland, and I had a friend there who had started the St. John's Haunted House. Ike, Dale Jarvis is his name, and he called me at about sort of year five, and he's a folklorist, and he had one of those epiphanies while off in England that had some Jack the Ripper tour, and thought, oh, lots of stories in Newfoundland. I should put a tour like that together, and so that was his inspiration, and it was quite successful, and it was, in fact, so successful that some nights he had too many people show up, and so he needed a second person to assist him in the process. And he'd had a variety of people, and at about year five, he phoned me up and he said, it's year five, I'm getting kind of tired as well, so hopefully you can just do some solo tours early in the month. He and I looked disturbingly alike, and so I sort of became Dale Jarvis and did the tour and really enjoyed the simplicity of storytelling. And I came to it purely as a performer, initially anyway. You know, hey, here's a gig, you know, it's a job. And I just loved the fact that it was just the story. It's just the story and the voice, and it was location specific because we were moving all throughout St. John's. And we would just walk and people would follow us. People loved the fact that they had to follow us.
Right.
And if they didn't keep up, they'd be left behind. I was amazed at how effective something so simple was in affecting people's emotions and in getting them involved. It was, you know, coming from theater school, where you kind of had this sense where you need a set, and you need the lights, and you need the costumes, you need all of this big stuff. But really, I did have a costume, admittedly, and the set was pretty dramatic because St. John's is so old, and there was mist and fog, so I suppose there was lighting as well. But I still like to believe that it was just simplicity of my performance and the story that affected people. So that really sort of opened my eyes to the power of storytelling.
Mm.
And so when I moved back to British Columbia, Dale said, oh, you should start up a tour wherever you land up. So we settled in Vernon. My wife's a professional, so she went to work, and I stayed home with her son, who was quite young at the time. And as I want to do, I was getting a little antsy for something to do, and my wife suggested, hey, why don't you take Dale up on that idea and start looking around? And I got to say, Vernon was not a town that was very forthcoming. As I've discovered over the years, there's plenty of stories.
Mm.
It's just nobody was very forthcoming in telling me about them. So I said, oh, you know, you've lived here, a long time, or they, oh, yes, you know. So was there any house that you, as a kid, you thought was haunted, or that people would talk about, you know, don't go there, or don't go there, anything like that? Nope. The response, I thought that was kind of strange. Every once in a while, somebody did say, well, people do say that the dental clinic down there is haunted, but, you know, it's not. But then I talked to sort of four people, and they'd all say the same thing.
Right.
Suddenly, four people are saying that the dental clinic is not haunted. So I started to look up those few leads that I had. You know, I looked in the paper, and then I went down to the archives and started pouring through the old newspapers to see if anything had come up, you know, starting off with sort of just Halloween specials, what people said, but then getting into the more historical stuff, and wound up striking up a conversation and a friendship with the archivist there, and she says, oh, there's tons of places that are haunted. People come in all the time. They bought a house, there's something strange going on inside it, and they come to find out the history of the house, wondering why it's haunted. And so she gave me tons of leads. She remembered all the places and sometimes the story behind them, so she was my saving grace. And then I went out and conducted some interviews, and this took sort of 3 years. I wasn't, you know, this was not a full-time pursuit. Stuff would happen, and I go, okay, I'll start up with that. And after 3 years, I went down to the library or the museum again, and on the walk home, I started just writing down a list of the stories I had. Some of them were just sort of gory, local stuff, true stories with no paranormal attached to it. But I thought, okay, well, wait. Then we got the dental clinic, which is not haunted, and people would phone me up with advice. Actually, the dental clinic house was great because I'd heard that it was haunted. I went and talked to the receptionist there, and she said, oh, yeah, it's haunted, and told me how there's like a little girl that can be seen
Okay.
She kept a diary, and this other woman was editing this diary and putting it into book form. And she said, you know that dental clinic that people say is haunted? I came across a story that might be of interest to you, and it was in the diary, and it records how back in 1897, when the house was built, a little girl died due to blood poisoning after 5 teeth were removed. Well, now I have a story.
Right.
And an ironic one, too, because it's now a dental clinic. So that became sort of, you know, an anchor. And then, of course, everybody knows about the Seymour House. Okay, well, that's great. So I next thing I knew, I had 10 or 11 haunted stories, or gory stories, because if I don't have a haunted one, I'll always go with a gory one. And I realized I had a tour, and so I just basically, in a whim, said, okay, in 2 weeks, I'm going to start doing a tour. I'll do it 2 nights a week for these 7 weeks. And it was completely arbitrary, and I figured, hopefully, I can make back the money I spent on, because I wear sort of an 1890s outfit,
right,
on the proper sort of morning jacket and tie and vest and my costume and my liability insurance. So hopefully, I can cover my expenses. And I went to do the tour. I did a preview, and about 80 people showed up. Wow, that's kind of interested.
Yeah. Then, sorry. Out of a town of how many? 80 people showed up?
There's about 35,000 to 45,000 people.
And by comparison, in Vancouver, it has a couple million people. If you were to do a show, be lucky if you got 20 people for your preview.
Well, I went and did my first night. I had about 150 people.
Wow.
Went and did my second night. I had 200.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best problem I've ever had with a show. Was what on earth are you going to do with 200 people? So clearly there was a demand for it, and it was late summer, and I've done it every summer since, and every Halloween season I usually do it a few days before Halloween.
While we're at it, Halloween is right around the corner, Saturday. Yep. Are you doing it this week?
I am doing this week. I have a couple private tours booked, but I'm also doing just general tours for the public on Wednesday and Thursday night. Costs is $5 cash, so I'm a very cheap enterprise, which might also account for why I get more people than I would if I was charging, let's say, $20 or $30.
Describe to me, like, you know, I show up to the tour, to the show. What is the basic format? I mean, we walk around town. How long a walk is it? How many stories do I get? Like, what happens?
Okay, well, you'll show up 5-10 minutes before 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
If you phoned and asked, and that's probably what I'd tell you. Or you'd be a keen, burning person and show up half an hour ahead of time and then just sit around waiting for a long time. I usually show up about 5 minutes before the tour starts. I have a little back route into where we start from, so for some people it seems as though I materialize to the extent of my special effects. And I stand there with a long staff with a skull on the top of it, my black suit, bowler cap, curled up mustache, goatee, and I kind of glower at everybody and appear very unapproachable, and most people do not approach me, but if they do, I'm polite, civil, and all that kind of stuff. And so most people just sort of huddle away from me, slightly fearful of what to do, and at 9 o'clock I start, invite everybody up. I give a little introduction to the tour in character. I am in sort of a persona, but it's a very vague, stern, mildly dour persona.
Mm.
But that's sort of the extent of it. I don't have a real character per se. It lends mood and ambiance to the tour. It also, I find, makes my jokes a little funnier. But there is a certain amount of craftsmanship to this. You have to admit that. And then at the end of my opening spiel, I take people's money. They all file past me. I collect money that way. And I start walking, and you follow me. And we stop at about 10 to 11 different locations in the course of the tour. I try to stop in front of buildings that are haunted, but every once in a while I'll have a story that takes place somewhere else, but it's a really good story. And so I have some kind of segue to lead into it. The basic format of the story is a combination of history and the paranormal occurrence associated with that building.
Mm.
I like stories where I can at least feel afterwards, well, if a place is going to be haunted, that would be it. So I feel that for the stories I have, they have to be a story. There has to be a story. There has to be some history, not like history in that you learn a fact, but there has to be a history behind the haunting. I have very few stories where it's just sort of a scary story or just sort of a weird story. Most of them have some kind of background, which, in my belief, frames the story and gives it, therefore, more validity.
Right.
Part of the thing I say at the beginning of the tour is that I'm not here to convince anybody to believe in the paranormal. The decision to believe or to not believe rests, as always, with you. And so I go into it not trying to convert people to this idea of thinking, or even necessarily to say, scare them, though I do make some campy jokes about that. I've been on a variety of tours, and personally I find it a little off-putting when I feel like people are trying to convince me to believe in it.
Right.
I'm much more likely to believe that people are just stating information and you can decide for yourself.
Yeah. Now, when you say trying to convince you, how do you mean? Like, how do these other tour operators try to convince people to believe?
I'm not exactly sure if I can answer that in a really clear manner, other than I felt compelled to say, oh yeah, I totally believe that. Like, I felt like they were trying to, like, pull that out of me, that they wanted everybody to be on the same page and believe as much as they do.
Okay.
Just based on how I was raised, right? I don't trust anybody that's trying to tell me what the truth is, which I have been thinking, well, why are you doing ghost tours? But I find it a lot more compelling when people aren't trying to convince me of anything. Like, I don't, like, that's not the purpose of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the purpose of the tour is to come and it's to be entertained and to learn something, but that's not why people come on the tour.
Right.
You know, the learning something is just sort of a little byproduct that I can say to myself, they learn something about the history. So that's sort of how I frame it, and that's sort of one of those things that's important to me, is to not try to convince people.
Yeah.
And I think that winds up making, maybe not, maybe more approachable after the set. I simply share the stories as I've heard them or as I've researched them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making a judgment call on that. One of the things that I've discovered over my years is that, you know, afterwards people often come and they share their experiences. The experiences that they have, I feel anyway, that they frame their paranormal experience based on whatever their personal belief system is. And so if they have a Catholic upbringing, they frame it in that, which, you know, which kind of frowns on the whole ghost idea. So it becomes a real...
It's about angels all of a sudden. Or something.
Well, in many ways, yes. And now I talked to one person who can call herself a clairvoyant, but she sees spirits and is in tune with this. And talks about how it's a struggle with Catholic faith. And she's framed it within her faith as something that hasn't worked quite right. And she needs to pray for them to complete their journey up to heaven. Right? Whereas other people that are much more New Age, they will go and they'll try to chant the spirit. The people that are heavily involved in this stuff, I mean, we'll go and, like, try to, you know, have a chant or, like, a seance type thing and to help them move on into the next dimension, because that's what they like. Just sort of straight-out belief. I don't think there's any sort of, I don't think there's much consistency.
Right.
That it's all sort of framed within that. So I'm very reluctant to tell people what is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will resist based on what their faith system is.
Right.
And how they process unreliability of the paranormal.
Yeah, they all come in with their own a priori decisions about whether this is true or not, and if it is true, how it came to be.
Exactly, the reason for it and all of that kind of stuff.
But you said that people come and talk to you after the show, is that right? Like,
yep.
Yeah. So it's not part of, like, you don't do a Q&A, or do you do a Q&A in the show?
No, I mentioned, I'm very sort of standoffish. I do treat it as a performance, partially because when I started doing it, it was much more comfortable for me to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me learn my script, because to some extent that's what it is. I've been on tours where they're a lot more casual and there's lots of questions that go on, and some people really like to be able to ask that question right away, you know, and sort of have a chit-chat tour.
Mm-hmm.
About different haunted places, and often that's good. Information comes out. I quite like the tour where it's a bit of a performance, and there's a bit of a wall there.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I say, you know, if you have questions, I'd be more than happy to ask them. And, you know, I drop out a persona, and we can chat about people coming and ask me about certain stories. There are certain stories that I often, people say, okay, what house was that again, and what was that story, and where can I find out more about this, the history behind it, or people come in and share their stories, or have you heard anything about this place? That kind of stuff. Quite often, I will end up having sort of another, like, a 10-minute, 15-minute chat with people afterwards.
Like, what about, Lee, with the stories you tell, the 10 or 12 stories you've got Are there some that you feel like, yeah, okay, this really is just a story, and perfectly obvious to me that the rattling was hot water pipes in the wall, or something like that? On the other side of the coin, are there ones that's like, wow, that's a great story, and I can't even begin to imagine a mundane explanation for it?
So the problem with doing a tour at a place like, or in British Columbia, I'd say in general, except for Victoria, because it's so new, that my stories can't be any older than 150 years. And I've sort of created a bit of an arbitrary line of about 50 years. I won't tell many stories about deaths and murders and that kind of stuff that's happened in the past 50 years.
Right, you're talking about somebody's
family involved.
Brother, right? Yeah.
You know, I have to be very careful about, you know, how tasteful I am in some stories, because I often have people say, oh, was that story about my grandma's house? Oh, yeah, I should. And they're usually really excited to have the, you know, a family member's house listed on there, because they know that story. But as long as it's a nice story, you know, so there's, like, suicides and stuff like that, where there's a ghost that lingers, and that's happened within the past 15 years, and I won't tell it, I guess, out of respect.
Right.
And so I've got a very small time frame of stories to deal with. I know Newfoundland, but we're dealing with 400 years of history. And so there are a lot more stories where you, like, okay, I do, or believe anyway, because I didn't put the tour together, so I don't know what the hell was doing. That clearly moved into folklore, right? That there are these stories that had moved into myth.
Yeah.
Whereas it's a lot harder for stories to move into myth with such a short time period.
Right.
And so I can go and find newspapers to confirm whether somebody, you know, so-and-so died.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have ended up having to be a little bit more sort of scientific and factual about it, which takes a lot of the fun out of it. I sure would love a headless specter. You know, like, honestly, like I think about the Newfoundland tour and just like, oh man, if only I had a headless specter, you know, the bodies that have been hacked up and put in a box and covered in pitch and hidden behind a wall, and then there was something on the other side of the wall. You know, like, those are great, you know, gothic type stories. Real blast to tell, but, you know, somewhere in your head you think, yeah, I would want some backup evidence on that story.
Yeah, the evidence is all dust at this point.
Like, there's stuff like the school, the French immersion school in town, that's haunted by Mr. Bearstone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a school full of children, and there's a couple old, kind of scary-looking pictures of Mr. Bearstone around. Whether it's haunted or not, there are a lot of stories about it. And so, you know, there's stuff like that where, and the ones where I don't feel like I have a real connection to it, I don't dwell on very much.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be more sort of incidental. This place is haunted, this is what they say. So anyway, what I was saying about such and such, there's very little that moves into folklore. I've got a pretty fantastical alien abduction story. You can find it online. It took place in Kelowna, and the woman who was involved went public with her story, posted pictures of the marks on her body, and was in the newspaper. You know, like, it didn't involve any research on my part. She was very forthcoming. Yeah, I think it's called Missing Time in Kelowna. I think it's sort of, if you Google that.
Fine. So you're counting, you're including alien abductions in the ghost tour.
Yeah, well, that's more for the summer. Like, for the Halloween tour, I try to keep it much a little more strictly ghostly. But I'd like to include any kind of paranormal, supernatural,
right,
type of stuff, because it all fits within sort of the same genre of storytelling, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying to remember, I can't quote my source, so this is completely arbitrary. But that the further east, or rather the further west you go across Canada, the belief in UFO increases. The further east you go, the belief in ghosts increases. You know, I heard that and went, I'd buy that. Even if it isn't, you know, I'm happy to keep perpetuating that myth.
Yeah, someone could do a focused poll on that and see what they come up with.
So yeah, I've got alien abduction. They talk about the Ogopogo, you know, a little cryptozoology there. And the Ogopogo is a lake monster similar to the Loch Ness monster.
Uh-huh.
The story goes back into the Salish mythology, so it was mentioned in First Nation stories. And there have been hundreds of sightings.
Okay, so have you ever had, you know, been in the middle of the tour and had somebody from the back of the crowd is shouting you down, saying, wait a second, that's bullshit, calling into question the stories?
No, I find most people very civil. I certainly start the tour and have a whack of people, mostly men, make some generalizations here, standing there with your arms crossed, looking unimpressed. I'd be dragged here to this garbage. And I try to dissipate that as much as I can in the introduction with humor and with saying, you don't have to believe. Just come for the stories.
Right.
And I go, oh, all right, fine. And they're usually quite fine with that afterwards. So I got to say that my ability to read a crowd of who the believers are and who the believers aren't is not particularly accurate.
They're too cool for school, but everyone loves a good, a good tale, a good yarn.
Well, exactly, and it really opened my eyes to the power of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we're all storytellers. We all do it from the time we all were sitting, and then usually around the dinner table or in the kitchen or something like that. You talk about your day. You tell stories about what happened. Mm-hmm. It helps people empathize with your experience by telling the story as opposed to just giving facts. Something happened that was particularly exciting, you get a good response from telling that story, you're going to tell that story again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to tell that story again. And if it's a particularly good story, then other people will start telling it. And anybody who's ever been in a relationship knows that their partner has stories that they tell.
Right.
You'll hear them again, and they love telling the story. To the point where sometimes you'll catch yourself telling their story.
I like it when people tell my stories. It's fun.
Yeah, back to you as though it's their experience.
I
find all of that really, really exciting. And then there's the stuff that's really good that sticks around and becomes sort of family folklore.
Right.
Grandma's story about when she was 8, she saved the neighbor's dog in the river, but when she came back, was chastised by her mother because she was wearing her Sunday best dress.
Is this part of the Newman family mythology?
It totally is. And every family has these, myths. Where you think back and part of your brain goes, did it really happen like that? Is that true? Or are we just sort of perpetuate this story? And that is, I think, we still ascribe to this oral tradition. It's getting lost more and more when people don't have meals together as families.
Right.
And stuff, and you aren't sharing that kind of story, and then people feel like they have no idea who they are or where they came from because they don't have these stories of their family. Now I'm editorializing probably a fair bit there.
Have you found that going back to your master's is changing? Is the academy changing your perspective on the ghost tours at all, or is it?
I think the stuff that's really that I'm really interested in is all stuff that I've had to deal with the ghost tours.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of issues of representation, which is all stuff I just sort of deal with in the process of putting a story together. The story takes place on the reserve. It involves, a very complicated set of politics. And, how do you approach that? How are you respectful? What is the issues around it, right? And, of course, with all stuff that, with issues of representation, I didn't realize what I was doing. I'm representing the Okanagan to people. Any storytelling and any writing and any creative process, you start fictionalizing people in the past, and it sort of really made me think about that process, that I am kind of making people up because I don't know them, so I'm taking the story, but by giving them words or giving them an experience or selecting exactly what experiences they achieved, I am creating a story, which is in some way fictionalizing, even though it is based on fact, which is always sort of tricky, and I try to keep my tour as factual as possible so that I can't be accused of manipulating the facts, manipulating the story to make something that wasn't there. I don't want to do that, and I don't want to tell that kind of story because, once again, I think it gives my story a lot more validity.
You mentioned orbs earlier.
Yeah.
How familiar are you with that phenomenon?
I'm not overly familiar it. I certainly haven't had a whole lot of people come up to me and say that they've experienced orbs.
Mm-hmm.
It happens occasionally, and then there's like electrical claps and that kind of stuff. I know one woman came to me and said, you know, there's a lot of stress going on with her husband and her, and they were experiencing these like electric claps going on in the house, and whether that was a manifestation coming from within her or without or whatever, I don't know. With the orbs, there's, once again, because everybody sort of has their own belief system, sometimes people just see stuff, right?
Mm.
As just like a floating, you know, object of light, and it's weird, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's a strange experience, and
yeah.
They don't know what it is or why, and they, you know, sometimes they take pictures of it. And then there's always the orbs in pictures and stuff like that, which I inadvertently take lots of pictures of the orbs in it, but I think that might have been rain on the lens. You know?
Yeah, well, totally. You can walk down a dusty, you know, stomp down a dusty staircase in the dark, turn around and flash your camera, and you're going to get an orb picture.
One night, at the end of my tour, the people that stayed, they belong to a paranormal group up in the Yukon, and they were talking about orbs and the energy, and that these orbs were like guardians, and that they're always around me, and they got out this little metal ball on a chain and said, you know what, if I move it around, it suddenly will start moving, like start swinging back and forth, you know, that's where the orb is, and that's where your guardian is.
Hmm.
And not everybody can see them, and only a few people can, and they could, or else they could sense their presence and that kind of thing. With everything, like with ghosts and everything, I've heard a lot sort of conflicting. But honestly, I haven't gotten a lot of reports of orbs. Do you have a particular interest?
No, it's one of the ones that I do know some of the mundane explanations, like catching dust with your flash, for example.
And then there's lots with the paranormal that can be explained away. Sometimes there are really obvious experiences where people say, you know, I saw a woman standing there.
Yeah.
Which is harder to refute than, you know, than specks of light in pictures.
Right, but by the same token, it's also equally hard to prove.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the point of my tour is not to prove or convince. So during the first year, especially when I had these really large crowds, now I have smaller crowds, it's sort of between 20 and 40 people, sort of. It is a nice size to be leading around town. But the large crowds, I had security, had a nine-month pregnant woman and her husband, my tough security, around. And they said, no offense to your stories, Gabe, but we've heard them a few times now, and the best stories are coming out of the crowd. To some extent, that's what I'm doing. I'm sort of facilitating the discussion on the paranormal. People have experiences that they can't explain, and they don't always talk about. And as I experience trying to research my tour, is that this is a place that doesn't normally discuss that in the open. And people are really relieved to be able to share their story as though it's normal. After one tour, I had this one woman telling me her, you know, trying to tell me her story, and she said, you may think I'm crazy, but I'm like, I just spent an hour and a half telling you ghost stories.
You might think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she still felt that way, even though I made it perfectly clear that I'm willing to share these kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain anxiety about sharing this kind of thing, you know, you know, people or whatever, you know, I have a nervous breakdown. I had one woman who called me from New Zealand, because 10 years ago she'd lived actually in that dental clinic building I was telling you about.
Right.
And had these really strange paranormal experiences, and she'd moved back to New Zealand, but it still bugged her, and she found my name on the internet. She was still trying to research it and called me to find out if I knew anything, because she was kind of concerned. She'd had a nervous breakdown or something like that. And I said, well, if you had, then you're not the only one who's had one in that house. So, you know, if anything, it gives her some comfort to know that there's at least a continuity of experience. Is it a ghost? Is it actually this little girl or not? I don't know. I can't prove that.
Right.
But it gives that experience some framework anyway.
All right. I think that's it.
All right.
Thanks for talking with me about this.
Hey, no problem.